हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवत्सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, so now up to now is now the Pandavas come back to the palace to meet Drupad. Then he's done his various tests to kind of figure out who they are. Then in discussions, Yudhishthira reveals that they're the Pandavas. So now Drupad is very happy. Then having gotten through that part, then he says, okay, so let's have the marriage ceremony so Arjuna should marry. Like that, and then, you know, then it's pointed out, well, how can I marry before Yudhishthira marries, and this and that. So, okay, so then you marry, you know, like that. And so then the point comes down is that, no, we're all going to marry. And so then Drupad is, what? And then Kunti says, you know, about, you know, Yudhishthira says he's okay with it. Kunti, she agrees with it because she stated it, so it must be the way it works out. Vyasadeva says it's ancient, it's not generally done like that. And so then, you know, because then the sense, you know, of Yudhishthira and Kunti is that we should go ahead with this. Then Vyasadeva, then he turns to Kunti and says, you know, gentle lady, you shall certainly be saved from sin. This is eternal virtue. Right, so now then we start. So the sage turned to Drupad and said, I wish to speak with you in confidence. So that means in private and, you know, like that. Vyasadeva rose and took hold of Drupad's hand. They went into the king's chamber while everyone else waited outside. When they were alone, Vyasadeva explained to the king why the marriage conformed with virtue. The ascetic called Drupad that Draupadi had been the daughter of a rishi in a previous life. She had prayed to Shiva for a husband. In her prayer, she asked the deity 5 times for a powerful husband. Shiva had replies, since you have asked me 5 times, in her next birth, you shall have 5 husbands. Shiva could not possibly ordain a sinful act. So Shiva comes, you know, and asks her, what do you want? And she just, instead of saying, I want a husband, she just said, I want a husband. She was so enthusiastic at that because she wanted, and she did the austerity. Shiva appeared and asked, and so in her excitement, she asked 5 times. So he says, okay, so be it. You'll have 5 husbands. You know, meaning at one time, not she'll have 5 different marriages and like that. And so then the first point is that Shiva couldn't say that it would be wrong. He wouldn't ordain something that was sinful. Vyasadeva further explains, so that's one aspect, because they're asking from there is how she would have 5 husbands. So it's just by the blessing of Shiva. Vyasadeva further explained that the princess was an expansion of the goddess Lakshmi. She had appeared from the sacrificial fire to become the Pandava's wife, who themselves had all been gods in their past lives. In fact, the sage explained, all the brothers had been incarnations of Indra in different millennia. Right, so she's why she's the expansion of the goddess Lakshmi, and their incarnations of Indra. So what's the connection? So the Divya Lakshmi, she is the wife of or consort of Lord Vishnu. So she's on a transcendental platform like the Lord, and so she's the goddess of fortune. So all opulence and everything comes from her. So that means opulence is used in the Lord's service. So then we have a point that here in the material platform, people want money and they approach Lakshmi for money, but it's not for Vishnu. It's connected with themselves just for their own usage and that, maybe pious, impious, this and that. But the point is if it's pious, they go about it, they deal with money properly, they approach money properly, then, you know, by that piety, eventually they'll get money. But because it's material, not spiritual, therefore that Lakshmi, or Dhana Lakshmi as we know, she's an expansion of the goddess Lakshmi. So it's the same potency, but now it's just coming down instead of from Yogamaya, now it's Mahamaya. And so that position, that is Sachi, the wife of Indra. She's the Dhana Lakshmi. Right? You still are worshipping the form of Lakshmi or Vishnu, but she, the personality with whom actually then is making these arrangements, that's Indra's wife. So that's why then Vyasadeva mentions that they're all incarnations of Indra. They've all been Indra. Because then Indra and his wife is not a problem. So Indra marries his wife, is it a problem? No. And she's supposed to marry five husbands, right? But as the goddess of fortune, she has to marry Indras. So the five of them have been Indras, and she's, you know, is an incarnation of the goddess Lakshmi. She's supposed to have the five husbands. Therefore, you put it together, no problem. Vyasadeva bestowed upon the king the divine sight to see the Pandavas as they had been in previous lives. Because now he explains this, okay, but it sounds weird. In the inner vision, Drupad saw the blazing form of Indra that each brother had possessed, their celestial bodies adorned with golden crowns and garlands. Struck with wonder, Drupad folded his palms and said to the sage, "Great Rishi, there is nothing outside your knowledge or capabilities. My mind is now satisfied. What the celestials have ordained must come to pass. We are all instruments in the hands of destiny. Let my daughter accept all five brothers as her husbands." Right, so it's an it's an arrangement of the Lord. So the Pandavas, there's always the five brothers. They always have that, their wife Draupadi. She's an expansion of the goddess Lakshmi. They're an expansion of Indra, and that. So that way, that's just always the way. So every millennia, when these pastimes come around, it will all be the same. There might be some slight difference on how it goes about, how the marriage comes about, how Vyasadeva discusses, or, you know, all these various details. So in this time, they're in hiding. Other times, they might not be. It's just a matter of how, in that particular millennia, Krishna and the Pandavas, their pastimes unfold. So there's always going to be some slight difference. That's called Kalpaveda. That's why we see sometimes in one Purana it explains the pastime in one way, another Purana says different. They're talking about actually different kalpas, different days of Brahma, or different manus like this. So they're not talking about the same incident. It's a general pastime that goes on. Just like, let's say, every evening, then the mother cooks dinner. So it happens every day. But you see, as it's each day, it's a different how it's cooked. Mainly, it's the same kind of cuisine, the same kind of cooking, same kind of volume, same kind of nature, but there's some slight differences in the spicing or how something's done. Or does that make sense? So there's some slight. So that's how the Lord's pastimes work. Every day, in the day of Brahma, they're all going on, but there's some slight differences from one day to the next. You know, for variety, there's eternal variety. The king and the sage rejoined the others and informed them of Drupad's change of heart. Like, so he must be really smiling now, because, you know, how often is that your son-in-laws are Indras and your daughter is the goddess Lakshmi? So he's going to be satisfied, as he said. Vyasadeva said, "Today the moon has entered the auspicious constellation of Pushya. The first ceremony should be performed at once, and Yudhishthira can accept Draupadi's hand." Right, because now they're going to start. The planets have done very nicely. The constellation Pushya, so that must be very good. So it must be that it's the waxing moon, and then it's the Pushya nakshatra. So he's saying, Vyasadeva said this is an excellent time. So then they'll just admit, because they would have had things arranged for the marriage, because it's understood if there's a Swayamvara, there's going to be a marriage. And so everything will be ready. It's just a matter of exactly the timing and all that. So it's not that they can't pull that together. So very easily that'll be done. And so then he'll then accept. And so because it started at an auspicious time, then over the 5 days, it's just basically, you could say, one continuous ceremony. Right? Drupad ordered his ministers and priests to make all the arrangements. like so the priests know how to do the you know the technical ritual, and the ministers know how to manage, how to organize, so they can get everything going, everybody organized, all the everything happening and all that kind of thing. And the priests know exactly how to do all the ceremony, what works and everything like that. So you need both. You have to have someone organize the environment so the priests can work. And then all those things that the priest doesn't work with. He doesn't work with decorations. He doesn't work with the meal, you know, other nice things like that. He doesn't deal with that. But it's all about what the priest is going to do, but you have to have all these other things to make it into a nice festival. A sacrificial fire was lit in the vast inner courtyard of the king's palace, right? Because palaces, they wouldn't be solid like nowadays. You always have the inner courtyard, because the idea is all rooms should have light. So then on the outside, it means all around the outside will be the rooms, and there'll be some veranda and that, so they'll get light from the one side and they'll get light from the other side. And then what you have a veranda, so you can move around to all the rooms. It's not like nowadays you have a hallway and you go, don't you can walk by it. And then you have the nice courtyard, because outside you have a view, inside you have a view. And just by that middle being open, and that, you know, air moves, the sun comes, you can do things. It's just like you want to go out and sit in the sun. But in modern housing, you're out in the public. But in the original houses, then you go into the inner courtyard. You're in the sun. You can do things. You can sit. The kids can play. You can dry things in the sun. You can do, you know, festivals in the courtyard like this, like the weddings and marriages and various pujas and things like that. So it has a great advantage like that. So space is important within the Vedic concept. Rows of pennants bearing the emblems of the gods lined the sacrificial arena, which was full of Brahmins chanting hymns. A beautiful altar was constructed from coral and gold, bedecked with sparkling jewels. Fragrant garlands were draped everywhere, and the aroma of costly incenses wafted throughout the courtyard. So they're building the altar itself from coral and gold. You know, that's very nice. Like that. The pennants means all the different flags, because all the different directions, you have different demigods in charge. So all their flags are in place. So the yagya itself is very ornate and very that, all the nice flags, the decoration. And then all around, also in the courtyard, then all the garlands are there. They're giving a fragrance, and he's burning very nice fragrances that are there, very nice aloes and everything like that. The king with his relatives and friends took their places in the compound, which lay next to a large lake of lotuses. Citizens of all classes assembled in the courtyard to observe the ceremony. Right? So citizens, that means it's a big courtyard. Right? If the king and his entourage and all that can be there, and citizens, it's a big courtyard. Brahmins with their heads covered by simple cloths, wealthy merchants shedding themselves from the bright sunlight with decorated parasols, right? The Brahmins would just, you know, put a turban on. And Shudras in their brightest clothes. So we see again that brightness of clothes, the bright colors, then the common persons, they become very inspired. You know, it's a festival, you put on your nice bright colors and that. Because other days, you're doing work and that, you don't want to ruin the colored clothes. You wear something more simple. Like that. So Brahmins will be simple. The businessmen and all that, they'll be merchants. They'll be very opulently dressed, you know, as Kshatriyas also. And then the common people will be in very bright clothes. All watched as the five brothers, dressed in silk robes and adorned with shining gold earrings, entered the compound like mighty bulls entering their pen. Right. So they're powerful, but they're comfortable. Because a bull coming into its own pen is going to be comfortable. Domya walked at their head. So that's the point. The Brahmin is there. The Kshatriyas follow the Brahmin. That's the principle. His bodily luster was as brilliant as the sun. So he wasn't just a Brahmin. He was, you could say, universal class Brahmin. Right? You know, you have, he's, you know, here he's good, or he's world class. He's universal class. He sat by the fire and offered libations of ghee. As the flames rose, he chanted mantras invoking the presence of Vishnu and the principal deities. Then he called Yudhishthir to come forward and accept Draupadi's hand. Right? So that you start the fire, install the fire, do all the preliminaries like that. Then they come forward for doing the kanyadan. The dark-complexioned princess, clad in bright yellow silks, and decorated with many precious jewels. Her long curling hair, adorned with flowers, stood to receive Yudhishthir. The bride and groom took each other's hand and walked around the sacred fire three times, sealing their union. Right, so then three times, and that means, depending on what it is, that may be Rig Veda. Like Samaveda we follow, that's seven times around. No, it's actually, yeah, you three times around the fire, seven steps. I think it's Rig does seven times around the fire. So, yeah, so we can see here is then they came, she received, I mean, she put the garland and all that, then there's going to be all the regular ceremonies of tying the hands, then they're pouring the water, then the sindur danam and that. So walking around the fire means she pours the ludge, the puffed rice into the fire, then goes around like this. And so going around that three times, the subset, that's then now you're married. The other things are preliminary for purification. After that, they're purification. On the days following Yudhishthira's wedding, each of the brothers married the Panchala princess. Vyasadeva informed the king that by the god's arrangements, his daughter regained her full virginity each day after a marriage and before the next marriage took place. So, in other words, when she was married the next day, it's as if she's not been married. So that's the uniqueness, is that she's married each one individually, but at the same time she's married to all of them. When she's ever with one of them, because you'll see later is that they'll make an arrangement that she'll, means if they're in a formal public thing, they're all together, but privately she's only with one at a time. You know, they might sit together, you know, with Kunti and talk like this, but when they're being intimate, she's only with one brother at a time. And when she's with him, she's fully focused on him, so it's like the other brothers aren't there. And then when she's next, so that's the uniqueness that she's has that quality of chastity, that she can have five husbands and it doesn't create any problem like that. When all five weddings had been sanctified, Drupad sat before the sacred fire and gave the brothers charity. To each of them he gifted 100 golden chariots drawn by four excellent steeds, 100 mature elephants, and 100 maidservants adorned with ornaments and flower garlands. So that's the each one of them, they got that. So that means, so between them, there's 500 servants, there's 500 elephants, and 500 chariots. Right? He also gave them large amounts of gold, various precious stones, and many valuable robes. Like so many celestials, the brothers began passing their days in joy in Panchala, the king's capital. For his part, having formed an alliance with the Pandavas, Drupad did not fear even the gods in heaven. Because we'll see is that later on, that when they go into the exile after the gambling match, then the demigods are having trouble. It means when Arjuna goes and visits Indra, then, because he goes for weaponry. But while he's there, the demigods have problems with certain demons. We'll come up to that story. And so they ask Arjuna to get rid of them. So that's why Drupad's not worried. So even if the gods attack with the Pandavas, you know, and that, no one can defeat them. After arriving back in Mathura, Krishna arranged for vast amounts of wealth to be sent as gift to the Pandavas. Right, so that going, that'll be actually for the brothers. The first one, to each of them gifted all these things, technically that's Draupadi's. It means the dowry, like that, because it doesn't mention here. The dowry is the girl's, but it's used in the marriage for them all, but technically it's hers. So the maidservant, she'll manage like this, but the elephants, the horses, that the husband will manage like that. But now when Krishna's sending, then he says all kinds of nice stuff, it's for them, unless it's specifically this is for Draupadi, which they will send. They'll send some nice clothes, nice ornaments, nice, you know, furnitures, and also probably also assistance. Great heaps of unworked gold bricks, right? So these are just bricks of gold, you know? And so a brick that's about like that big and about that thick is a kilo. So you can imagine if you have a full brick, which would be like this and about that thick, it's a few kilos. And so it's heaps of bricks. That means heaps means pile. So, you know, it's so many hundreds or thousands of kilos like that. Piles of precious stone. That means like literally piles like this, including numbers of priceless Vaidurya gems. So that'll be a separate pile. Soon arrived at Kampila and were offered to the brothers. Costly carpets, robes, blankets, and skins were placed before them in piles. Krishna also sent them thousands of maidservants, all young, beautiful, and highly accomplished. Well-trained elephants and horses, as well as hundreds of chariots, were also presented. So all that's there. So then they can use those themselves. Then it means that they put together an army. Then now they those their you know generals and their you know, main wars all have chariots. So you know these are all the things, gifts of kings. Out of love for Krishna, Yudhishthira graciously accepted the wealth and sent back a message of gratitude. Secure in the knowledge of Krishna's friendship and blessings, all the brothers felt a good fortune assured in every way. So now you have the Pandavas, Drupad, and the Yadavas. Now they're all allied because Kunti is a Yadava, so naturally that family. So they're cousins, they're family. And now Drupad is family. So we see is that that's a very strong position. But before this, then there was the five brothers on their own with nobody. So that's why Yudhishthira was very careful about staying incognito. But now, once they have allied with Drupad, they don't need to worry about it. That's why he said, we're the Pandavas. Okay, chapter 12. Dhritarashtra gives half the kingdom. As the kings left the Swayamvar for their respective countries, they marveled at what they had seen. The illustrious Pandavas were alive. So right now it's known. What's that? Because they went back to their... It means when it said before they left the arena, that means they went back to their palaces that they were that were being made for them as guests. They wouldn't just from there just walk straight out and get on their chariot and leave. They go back in that. And so then this is happening the next day, right? Because then that was that night, so everybody would have gone back at night. They would have spent the morning, early in the morning, first thing in the morning, the Brahmins came and asked them to come. There would have been a you know a breakfast and everything like that. Then they met Vyasadeva. Then he said, you know, this is an auspicious time, so everything should be done. The marriage is there. So that means the next day, then everybody would know it's the Pandavas they've married and all that. So that makes sense? Yeah. The illustrious Pandavas were alive. Arjuna had shot down the target and won the princess. And Bhima had faced the kings with complete fearlessness and thrown down the mighty Shalya, because Shalya is one of the kings that's the strongest 10,000 elephants. So he'll be famous, you know, like Jarasandha. He kills Jarasandha, he throws down Shalya. He's famous. The king censured Bhishma and Dhritarashtra for having allowed the Pandavas to be persecuted and deprived of their rightful kingdom. Right. So now everyone, of course, Duryodhana and his brothers and Karna aren't the ones, you know, censuring Dhritarashtra and that, but everybody else is. Hearing of this turn of events, Duryodhana heaved a disconsolate sigh as he made his way back to his Hastinapur. Right, because he hears about this and hears all the other kings and all, because they have their people out. Everybody's listening to what's going on. He pondered the situation. How had his cousins escaped the fire? Because as far as they were concerned, they were dead. They actually sincerely went and did the death rites. They were all convinced they were dead. How now they were more powerful than ever. Right? Because before, they were just part of the scene with the family, so they didn't have anything separate. They were powerful in that they were situated in a good family. And the kingdom itself had power. But they themselves personally didn't have power. But now they're married, so now they're you know considered you know leaders of the community. Before they're brahmacharis, so they don't have that status. They're leaders in the community. They're married. They're allied now with Krishna and with Drupad, and so now they are powerful. And so then you know so that's Duryodhana saying, how did this happen, right? So that's the point is he tried to get rid of them, so they were gone. They had nothing and then got rid of them. But instead, he sent them out and they come back stronger than they were before. Now they were more powerful than ever, allied with Drupad and Krishna. They were forced to be reckoned with. And their own prowess was obviously exceptional, right? Because now they actually saw. Because in the stadium, when Drona showed everybody's prowess, everybody shows off and this and that. But when they actually had the fight, just two of them defeated all the other kings. Just two brothers had successfully taken Drupad from the midst of hundreds of kings. So that becomes obvious. Okay, they're not, you know, because otherwise they always say, yeah, we can get rid of them. But actually, even the invincible Karna had been more than matched, right? Because he decided, okay, this Brahmin's more powerful than me, and decided to stop, right? Because when he knows it's Arjuna, then his passions come up, and no, I can beat him. But when it was a Brahmin, then he would think clearly and think, no, this guy's more powerful. Hot tears ran down Duryodhana's cheeks. That means he's angry. By his side, Dushasana said consolingly, "Do not grieve, brother. It was only because the Pandavas disguised themselves that they managed to win Draupadi." He's just saying, only they disguised and he managed to win. Otherwise, if they hadn't had the disguise, they wouldn't have won. That doesn't make any sense, but whatever it is, you say it to make your brother feel better. "They took us all by surprise." Clearly, destiny is supreme and human effort is useless, right? They're saying it's, you know, because they're taking it, my effort is the thing, but then I did it, nothing happened, so destiny is supreme. Like, so they can never balance that. Yes, destiny is just the results of your previous action. You perform the action now, it's not going to go against the destiny. It's going to create the next one, like that. "Despite our exertions, the Pandavas are alive and flourishing." Duryodhana frowned. "This is all the fault of the useless Parochana," right? He's dead, but still he's at fault. "He let us down badly. At least he perished in the fire." Yes, so you can see, for them, everybody's just a pawn for their plans. So that's the difference between, you'll always see is Duryodhana, in the Mahabharata says he's like a thorn tree, like that, while Yudhishthira's like a very nice flowering tree. You know, a very pious tree. So Arjuna is always worried about the family and everybody, and like this, Yudhishthira, the Pandavas are worried. Well, Duryodhana only worries who's useful for him to be in power and who's an obstacle for his power. That's his only interest. Okay, so yes. We'll stop here, and then we'll continue when they enter the capital and how the news comes to the capital, means in Hastinapur. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.